This is fun! The FU Network.
And now, here's Michelle Badusky, keeping it real.
Hey everyone, it is Michelle Badusky, keeping it real with you today.
And now, here's Michelle Badusky, keeping it real.
Michelle Badusky here with you, keeping it real. We are broadcasting today on Kick FM, our local internet radio station right out of Rapid City, Manitoba. And you can also be listening to this on Ed the Sox FU Network. And if you aren't on Ed the Sox FU Network, you need to change that because these podcasts will change your life. And of course, you could also be watching me on Facebook or listening to me on my own podcast, right on SoundCloud. So wherever you are tuning in, thank you very much for being with me today because we have a very interesting conversation to have. Now, it has been almost 3 weeks since Hunter Strait Smith was stabbed in Winnipeg. If you do not know who I'm talking about, this is the 3-year-old boy who was stabbed in his bed while he was sleeping from his, it was his mother's former partner. There was a domestic dispute between them, and he left her, walked to her home, and stabbed her sleeping child in his sleep. Now, he died 3 days later in hospital after being taken off life support, and the person that killed him, I'm not even going to dignify him with mentioning his name on my broadcast, has been charged with second-degree murder. Now, I haven't actually spoken out about this instance in the last 3 weeks. It has not been on my channel. It hasn't been, you know, I haven't been openly discussing this because it is such a tragedy. It is so emotional. And I wanted to give the family some respect and not make it, you know, more public than it already was. Because as a mother, I have 4 children. I could not imagine what they are going through and what this woman is going through. And today's show isn't about this case in particular, but it's about what has happened and what I've seen happening since then. Now, keyboard warriors, you guys are out there, and I know you're listening to me, you're watching me, and you're probably already, you know, got your fingers on the keyboards, ready to leave a comment. But I'm going to say this, that the keyboard warriors that are behind the scenes criticizing and judging and blaming the mother of this young child for his death, the family, and everybody else except the person that actually committed the crime has been incredibly, incredibly upsetting to me. Because we have come so far in our society, and yet apparently we have so much further to go, especially around things like domestic violence and the victim blaming that I see going on here and the lack of understanding. Someone said to me just the other day, you know what, this is completely her fault because she put him in that situation by being in this relationship. How awful is that? This is not the 1950s. We should have more awareness of what is going on in society and why these things happen. And if we don't, we need to get educated because domestic violence hasn't disappeared. You know, these comments that people are making make it sound like suddenly, you know, we have the internet and we have resources, so there's no more domestic violence in this country, and anyone who is involved in a domestic violence or an intimate partner violent crime is to blame because they should have known better somehow. And that is such complete bullshit. Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit of my story. I was very open about this in my book. If you haven't read my book, you should. I'm a little biased, but I think it's pretty damn good. But I'm very open, and I have been very open about my own experiences with domestic violence, or what we call intimate partner violence. And it started when I was a kid. I grew up in a home that, you know, was plagued with a lot of addiction. There was addictions issues. There was abuse. We came from northern Manitoba. We were, you know, it was what it was. And I grew up seeing, you know, my dad belittle me, my brother, my sister. There was a lot of name calling. There was a lot of negativity. My dad never laid a hand on me, but he did to my brother. And I remember some extreme beatings when my brother was a teenager, and my brother was about 7 years older than me, so by the time he was a teenager, I was old enough to remember what was happening. I remember that. I remember, you know, my dad hitting my mom. I remember the violent arguments between them, the name calling, and it was normal to me. That is how I grew up. I grew up actually, and I mentioned this in my book, and I really should call my mom and apologize for this, and I don't think I have done it yet, and maybe right after this podcast I will. I remember growing up thinking a lot of the times that my mom deserved what she got. You know, she was mouthing off to my dad, and I remember this mentality going, you know, when he's drinking and he gets to this certain point, if you push him, he's gonna snap, so why don't you just shut up? I was blaming her for this man beating her. And, you know, she'll probably to this day say, oh, it wasn't a beating. You know, I got slapped around a little every now and then when I got out of line. But that's because to her it was normal and she completely assumed the fault of it. And this is what's happening still today. And we still don't understand the cycle of violence and what happens to people when they are in these types of families and relationships. They seem normal. I grew up thinking that that was normal. So when my first husband got drunk and slapped me around a little, you know what? I thought it was normal. I blamed myself. I thought that this is what happens when you fight. This is what happens when you piss somebody off or you say the wrong thing. And I started changing my behavior around that. And it was normal. So when you look at someone who is in a relationship that is unhealthy or abusive, it's really easy to sit back and judge and say, you know what? Why don't they just leave? They must be asking for it. And that type of shame, that type of blame actually perpetuates the problem because they're already thinking that. This isn't something that, you know what, happens to healthy people with strong self-esteem and strong awareness of what is right and wrong. People that are in abusive relationships, people that came from abusive families and histories that normalize this type of behavior are not healthy. They are not aware even that this is wrong or that there's anything bad going on. And it's our job as friends and family and society to help these people understand that there is a better life out there. It is our job to step up and instead of condemning victims for being victims, to help them help themselves. And this is our job. And I'm going to tell you why. Because, you know, it wasn't until I moved away and left my first husband and started hanging around. I moved to a different town. My whole life kind of imploded and I packed up my 4-year-old son and started fresh in a new town with no family, no friends. I got a job waiting tables. I started studying at night. I got him into daycare and, you know, we worked our asses off in absolute poverty because I had nothing until I got, you know, my first diploma and things like that. But during that time, I started hanging around different people because, you know, and this is why I actually started my network, because the more we talk to people that come from different walks of life, the more we talk to people with different backgrounds, different ethnicities, different religions, different life experiences, the more we broaden our own horizons and the more we learn from each other and the more we learn what other people see as normal or, you know, understand their background, the more we can grow as individuals. And the more exposure I got, and this wasn't until I was in my early 20s, that I realized that not everybody lived the way I lived. Not everybody thought that was normal. Not everyone thought those types of things were okay. And slowly I started, you know, getting better. And it took a long time. I mean, yes, there was a lot of addiction issues. There's a lot of self-esteem issues. I'm not saying this is, you know, one of those moments where I had this awakening and suddenly I was this healthy person with a strong self-esteem that told every man that wanted to lay a hand on me to go fuck themselves. But I got there eventually. And only by exposing myself to different ideas did that happen. Because if I would have stayed in the same situation and continued to surround myself with the same people and the same lifestyle, I never would have known any different. So it's really easy to look at your life and your experience and go, they should just do this. Well, you know what? A lot of people don't even know that's an option. And a lot of people are so beaten down that even if they do know it's an option, they don't think they're worth it. They don't think it is available to them. They don't think anyone will help them. There are so many reasons, and over the next few weeks, we're going to be exploring and meeting with people in the community to explore what those resources are and try to get a better understanding of why people are still in these types of relationships and why this is happening. Because we've done some research, and here are some statistics. Now, this is straight from StatsCan. Stats Canada, you know what, this is completely unbiased. This is not, you know, off some political propaganda page. This is real statistics here in Canada. In 2017, so 2 years ago, I'm 45 years old. When I grew up, this kind of life was normal. And many people are saying that it's not normal. It's not normal for them, but for a lot of people, it still is. Because 75,399 women were victimized by an intimate partner in 2017. 75,000 women in Canada were victimized by an intimate partner, either physically or sexually, in 2017. And 20,305 men were. This isn't just a man versus woman thing, although women are, you know, three times more likely, or it happens more than, you get what I'm saying. Three times more women are victimized than men, but these are only the crimes that are reported to police. So I'm going to take a guess based on my own history. And every single time I saw a spouse hit another spouse, or there was a sexual assault under the same roof, either from siblings or spouses or, you know, aunts, uncles, whatever, that did not go reported, I'm going to guess that you can probably times that number by 100 for individual instances of violent or sexual assault in Canada. But let's just go with the number that's reported because that's what we know. 75,000 women, 20,000 men in 2017 were victimized. Over one third of all police reported violent crime in Canada. Intimate partner violence, one third. So when you're looking at your community and you're screaming about, you know, gun violence and gang violence and all of that, those are serious things. They are. But 30% of all violent crimes are happening under one roof, behind closed doors, involving intimate partners. We teach our children stranger danger, but yet we forget to talk to them about things like domestic violence, domestic abuse. And it's not always just physical, but physical is those ones that are reported. Can you imagine how many instances of verbal abuse, emotional abuse, gaslighting, isolation, financial abuse, all of these things are happening as well. And yet we don't talk about it. How many times do you talk about this in your family? How many times do you set the standard and, you know, talk to your children about what acceptable behavior is? Because these are conversations we need to have. This was interesting, though, that police reported violence is most common between dating partner than spouses. So while we're dating, we are more likely to be victims of violence or sexual assault with an intimate partner. And you can tell by my voice, this is upsetting to me. This is not something that, you know, should be happening. But the fact that it is, and it is still so prevalent in our communities, and yet instead of talking about it, instead of having the conversations about what we are going to do about it as a society, we continue to let the cycle go. And we continue to victim blame, and we continue to make these judgments based on our own experiences instead of trying to understand what other people's experiences are and how we can better help them. Police reported violence by a spouse is less likely to result in charges. So even when a spouse is victimized violently or sexually by another spouse, it's less likely to result in charges. Why? I'm not sure, but we're going to talk to some law enforcement officers and find out the challenges they have around that area. And this is going to be the first of many podcasts where I'm going to address this issue because we need to have these conversations. This is one of those things that we don't hear talked about enough. And it goes on. It goes on everywhere. Saskatchewan and Manitoba have the highest instances of intimate partner or domestic abuse. Manitoba and Saskatchewan, our home. We have the worst rates of domestic violence in the entire country, including almost 2 to 3 times that of Ontario. And yet, do we talk about it here? Not very often. The advocacy groups, the support groups, the resources, they've got the information, they're putting it out there, but yet in casual conversation, how often do you talk about domestic abuse in a way that is helpful? Or do you just gossip about it and say, oh, I heard so-and-so, this happened. What is she still doing with that man? And then you go on with your life. Because I hear those conversations in my community and we know what's happening. In some places, we just turn our backs to it. And is that the kind of life, is that the kind of society that we want? And if you're wondering what this has to do with the murder of Hunter Strait Smith, is because children are often the victims of domestic violence. It is so often, and the statistic is not in front of me, and we're going to be talking to some advocates and some professionals on the front line to get the exact numbers. But we do know that in a situation of domestic abuse or intimate partner violence, that the criminal, the victimizers, will often use children and even pets against those they are trying to control in order to intimidate them, in order to control them, in order to threaten them, and in order to punish them. And I don't know what was going through the mind of this person when he stabbed an innocent 3-year-old in his sleep, but we do know that he had a history of domestic violence with this child's mother. We do know that there was a non-contact order that he was in violation of. We do know they had an altercation at a different location that night, and that he was so angry and he walked all that way and took it out on a child. And we can only assume it was to punish that child's mother. But like I said, without knowing what was going through that person's head, I can't say that for sure, but that's exactly what it looks like to me. And this is the scary stuff. 17,771 children were assaulted by a family member in Canada in 2017. That's just what was reported to police. How many children are being hurt that feel they don't have a voice? How many children are being hurt in a family of violence where they think it's normal and don't even realize that there's something wrong? How many children are being hurt and actually being silenced by others in the household that are victims themselves in order to avoid punishment and retribution? Because I know that happened to me. My brother was extremely abusive to me, and it was just kind of ignored. You know, I do remember one time Child and Family Services was called in because I was black and blue and the school noticed it. And I got in trouble for telling them that my brother did it. And because it brought unwanted attention to my family. That was normal, you know, and of course it impacted my mental health. It impacted my self-esteem. It, you know, I'm not blaming my parents or my family. It just was what it was. And when we know better, we do better. And at that time, they did not know better. Now we know better. And I know now the effect of my childhood and those types of instances had on me, and, you know, leading to mental illness and addiction and self-loathing. You know, you put yourself in those positions because when you are told that you're worthless, you seek out people that treat you like that, because you don't believe you deserve any better. And you end up in really, really scary situations. And you continue to be victimized because you see yourself as a victim. It takes a lot to change that mentality. And, you know, it's really easy, like I said, to sit up and go, why don't you just leave? Why don't you just say this? Why don't you just do this? It's not that easy when you feel powerful. And in a lot of cases, people are afraid. They're afraid for their life. They're afraid for their children. And one of the most interesting statistics that came out of our research is that rural crime rates for intimate partner violence. So again, domestic abuse is higher in Saskatchewan and Manitoba, 2 to 3 times higher than that in Ontario. Just keep that in mind. But the rural crime rates were almost 2 times higher than in urban centers. So people who are a little bit more isolated, people who are living in areas without direct access to resources, that may be financially dependent. A lot of people are, you know, we do know that one of the symptoms of an abusive relationship is control. And often that means controlling finances, vehicles, and isolating from friends and family. And when you're in a rural location, that is a lot easier to do, because there is nowhere else to go, literally, when you are in a small town. And the stigma is definitely higher in a small town. You don't want to say anything. You don't even want to leave the house if you've got a bruise, because you don't want to be, you know, the topic of gossip. And you just feel, I mean, we just know this. And we are going to be talking over the next couple of weeks with people who have a history of overcoming domestic abuse and violent crimes. And we're going to be exploring things like Clare's Law and the controversy around it. And if you don't know what that is, it is a law that is being introduced in Saskatchewan, looked at in both, I believe, Alberta and Manitoba at this time. We're still researching the background and checking some of the legalities of it. But Clare's Law is a law that will allow partners in a relationship to seek out the criminal record history of people they are dating through the police services to gain access to their criminal records or find out if there was any instance of domestic assault and or violence that they should be aware of. That's just it in a nutshell. We are going to explore it a lot more as we continue to talk about this. But did you know that 20 children in Canada were killed by a family member in 2017? 20. That was 2 years ago. And I don't know what the stats are now, because it takes time to get those statistics. But Hunter Strait Smith didn't deserve to die. His mother didn't deserve to be blamed by public opinion on social media. And as awful as it sounds, that if there is any way to look at this tragedy as, you know, something to come of it, something positive to come out of it. And I feel even a little disgusted at myself saying that anything could be positive out of the death of an innocent child. At least we're having the conversation. At least we have the vehicle to use this outrage and use this emotion. And you can hear it in my voice. It's been 3 weeks. I have been trying to come up with a way to address this. I've been working on the research, and I still have difficulty talking about it without wanting to bawl my eyes out. And I did not know this family. The pain that they must be in is unspeakable. And no matter, this is what I think people forget is, you know, they get all self-righteous on social media and say, I would have done this, I would have done this. You know what? You can say that all you want. Retrospect, hindsight is 20/20 always. And when you are given the blessing of having whatever life experience that you have that gives you those skills and resources to say those things, you are blessed. The inability to look at things from other people's perspective has permeated our society into something ugly. You know, social media has done this to us, because instead of having conversations with people from everywhere, from all different experiences, we tend to seek out like-minded individuals, and we are more divided now than ever. And divisiveness is one of those things that we talk a lot about, and we think about it in terms of politics and people. It's not. We divide ourselves. We are the cause of our own divisiveness in this country, because we seek out like-minded people with the same ethnicities, the same religions, the same beliefs, the same politics, and we isolate this little group into thinking and supporting each other to the exclusion of all else. And this is what's happening here when we are attacking someone and blaming them for the actions of someone else. One person killed that child. One person. One person is to blame for their death. As a society, we are failing these families, and we have to take responsibility as well, because things like a non-contact order, things like lack of education and resources for families in crisis, a lack of treatment options if there's addictions in play, a lack of mental health resources, a lack of education, all of these things are society's problems. And if you think it's not your problem, you're wrong. You live here. If you think that intimate partner violence and domestic abuse is something that is, you know, limited to a poverty line or an ethnicity or a race, you're wrong. It happens across the board. It's just like addiction. It's one of those things that people love to say, it could never happen to me. Well, it can. And you know what? I honestly believe, and I talked about my late husband when he committed suicide in 2008. Sorry, I should use the term when he died by suicide 2008. And this might be a little bit graphic to some, he slit his throat and he did it right in front of me. And to this day, I strongly believe that he was in such a mental decline with his illness. He was suffering from complex PTSD that he did it to stop him from hurting me. And I believe that he took his own life to save mine and maybe even my children's. And that is reality. That is something that is not limited to any kind of demographic. You know, he was never physically violent, but because of the issues and the mental health issues he was struggling with, myself as well, and our family dynamics, there was a lot of verbal abuse. There was a lot of emotional abuse. And I'm not even going to say that it only went one way. It was an unhealthy situation for us all to be living in while we were seeking help for that severe mental illness. And we need to look at things like that. We need to say, how can we prevent this from happening again? Family-related homicide against children and youth are most commonly motivated by frustration, anger, and despair. So what can we do in a society? What can we do in rural Manitoba? What can we do in Saskatchewan? What can we do across this country to help people who are dealing with frustration, anger, and despair, and families that are suffering the consequences to deal with this? That's the question we should be asking ourselves. We shouldn't be asking ourselves, who is to blame for Hunter Strait Smith's death? We should be saying, how can we prevent another innocent child from losing their life, another spouse, another family from being devastated? And what can we do about it so that it doesn't happen again? I'm looking forward to hearing your comments on that one. And we'll talk to you next week. This is Michelle Baduski, keeping it real.
You've been keeping it real with Michelle Baduski. You can follow her on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
This is fun! The FU Network!